Okay, we're getting at the bottom of Kuf Samach Gimel Amud Bet. Here, the Gemara is going to discuss the position that was introduced in Kuf Samach Gimel, the position of Rav. The position of Rav is Gufam Amarav Shtar Habahu Ve'edav Alamachak Kasher. And we have a document that has on it both the Shtar itself as well as the Edim on a erased cloth. Then it's fine because the assumption is that the Edim were signed on this document at the same point that the Shtar was written, and not that something was erased and then they signed on the document, or something was changed and they were there. Because it's, look, they're both erased beforehand, we assume that they were written at the same time, that it's a fine document. Vintamar. So now what do you want to say? Mechek v'chozer mechek. What's your biggest fear here? Your biggest fear here is that they signed on the erased document. So now the Edim are signed on an erased document. You have the Shtar written on an erased document. So what do you do? You just erase the Shtar again and write a new Shtar. So if you write a new Shtar, who's going to be able to tell? They're both on an erased document. It looks totally fine. So to that, the Gemara answers, Enu domen imchak pam achat leimchak shtei pe'amim. There is no comparison between being erased once and being erased twice. Mean that you can distinguish between being erased once and you can distinguish between erased twice. Because of that, there's no issue. Now Tosfos has a machlokas about whether being or understanding to see the ability to see the difference in erasure, is that only when it's written on? I mean, it's only when you've written on both areas. You've written on the area that was erased twice, and you've written on the area that's erased once, then you can clearly see it. Or is it even when they're blank? I mean, that you can still see it. Even if you saw a blank cloth that had erased twice on one part and erased once on the other part, you'd be able to see it. There's two shitot and tosvot about what you need in order to see it. But nevertheless, the Gemara believes that there's a clear difference. So therefore, we do not worry about the fact that once it was erased once, you're going to erase it again, and you'll be able to change the shtar, and the edim will be signed on an erased document. That we don't worry about. So what is he going to do? He's going to go to the makom edim. He's going to throw ink on it. He's going to splash the ink, or he's going to do whatever he wants over there. Erase it. So what's he going to do now? He's going to have the original shtar written on an area that is erased once. The edim, he will have them sign in an area that is erased twice. How will he do that? He'll throw, it'll be erased once already, then he'll splash ink on it and erase that ink again. So now the area where the edim are signing is already erased twice, and the upper area is erased once. So now, what does he open to himself the opportunity to do? That later on, after the edim have signed on this document, he'll go and erase the shtar on the top, and now that'll also have a layer that looks like two, and now everything will look uniform at this point in time. So Gemara says, oh, that we don't have to worry about that. No problem with that. If erasure has to be done in front of them. Now, I wouldn't say it has to be literally in front of them, but they have to see that there's a consistency between where they're signing and the shtar above them. Meaning that if it's obvious, the first chashash that we said was that it's obvious to an outsider looking after the fact that you could see that it was erased twice and erased once. But the same is true for the edim up front. The edim may not sign on a document where they see where their signatures are in an area that is erased twice, and the area above is only erased once. So the edim themselves have to be careful about this, or ensure that they're not compromised by having them sign an area that was already erased twice. So that we can prevent that.
The
Edim have to know this halacha. Right. So it's interesting that Tosfos, we haven't spent a lot of time with some of these Tosfos team, but Tosfos spent a lot of time says that of an aid, where Chosheish, many times for the problems that they can alter the document, they can change something. And Tosfos says, well, what about the fact that if the aid writes his name over here, you can go and stick right in front of the aid's name, Plony owes me money. And then his name, he's like signed right afterwards. So you can create an IOU document with his signature, his handwriting on it. That's it, he's chayaf. So Tosfos asks a number of times, like, oh, you have the right, on the right margin. Or if he signs on the left side of the document, this is going to happen, he's exposing himself. Tosfos says over and over again, that is avad anafshe. The aid lost for himself. Meaning that what we want to do is protect the integrity of the shtar. The aid, the witness, if he can't, he has to take care of himself. Meaning that he has to protect himself from not being compromised as an aider where he writes it. So our expectation is that the Edim, are knowledgeable and have the ability to protect themselves or understand what they're doing is going to expose themselves to, right? Could expose themselves to problems. And also over here, our assumption is that the Edim see. We will see, Tosos does mention that maybe the Beis Din is more medayek than the Edim. It's not always so obvious up front whether the erasure, but a Beis Din who looks carefully and spends time might be able to see it. But here, at least, the Gemara thinks that the Edim could see such thing or understand it, and either it has to be erased in front of them, or they have to be able to discern that the erasure that they're signing on is the exact same erasure that the shtar is written on. So now, Beitave, hu ala niyar, ve'idav ala machak kasher. Wait a minute. We have a brace that says just the opposite. That if the shtar itself is found on nice cloth, and the Edim are signed in an area that was already erased, kasher. So this is exactly the case that we're worried about. The case is where the Edim sign on something that is already degraded, and then the shtar is written on a better quality. Why? What's going to happen now? They sign on the part that was erased. The shtar is written on a beautiful piece of cloth. If we're going to write the shtar, he's going to come erase the shtar, and then write the new shtar. Now they're on the same quality of paper, or same quality of cloth, because it was, now the Edim were already on an erased part, and the upper part's erased, and nobody's going to question this. But yet the Braisa says, kasher, no problem. Why don't we worry about exactly this chashash that we raised before? That he can go and erase the whole shtar up top, then make it uniform with what the Edim are signed on, and it'll look great. And then it's hit the shtar and the Edim on the same quality of cloth, and we'll make that, we'll approve that. So it says, Dichtive hachi anachna sahade chatamna amachaka v'shtar hakotav al niyara. That the Edim themselves state that when they sign it, they're going to say, we signed on erased cloth. The shtar was written on regular cloth before there was any erasure. So the Edim make a declaration as to the consistency of the cloth that they are signing on versus what the shtar is written on.
They actually write that?
Yes, they actually write that.
So then Tosfos is probably then an aid to someone turning into our ears.
Right, so that's what you can do, right? There are certain ways to get around that, right? To write aid, to put it, to make sure that they are closer to the margins. There are ways to protect yourself in these instances. I'm not saying that the Edim cannot protect themselves, but they just have to be aware to do it. Right, exactly. So now, Umar says, okay, if they write that, where do they write it? Where do they write this declaration? Imlatachat. Right? If he writes the declaration under where they signed, what's he going to do? Gaizle. He's just going to slice off the bottom of the document. Eli, if it's above them, what is he going to do? Machikle. He's going to erase it, because why? The upper part is good cloth, and they're machak, so he's just going, with the rest of the shtar, he's going to take it off. So what are they going to do? Dichtivi ben sada de sado. In between the two edim. So they sign right in between the one aid signs, and they write this information, and then the other aid signs. So this is between the two Edim. So then we're not going to worry about the fact that he's going to erase it, because it's in between the two Edim, and then it'll look different. Right? And it's not in a position where he can slice it off at the bottom. So that's how we'll solve our problem. Where it says, what are you going to do with that second half of that verse? Hu'al machak ve'idav al niyar. If the shtar itself is written on an erased document, and the Edim are signed on regular cloth before it was erased, pasul, it's invalid. Am I pasul? Why should it be pasul? They can write the same thing. They could just say, listen, we wrote on regular cloth. The shtar was written on a erased document, and we're all protected. So he says, well, if you're going to suggest that the Edim are making a declaration about the consistency of the cloth for the shtar and the consistency on which they signed, then why should there be a difference whether they sign on the cloth and the shtar is on machak, or the shtar is on cloth and they're on the machak? If they can declare it, it should work either way. Yet the Braisa differentiates. It says it's only kasher when the shtar is on the niyar, on the cloth, and they're on the machak, then it works. But when they are on the niyar and the shtar is on a machak, there we don't allow it. So what are you worried about? What are you worried about? If they're signed on cloth, shtar is written on the machak, what are you afraid? He's going to erase afterwards the shtar again and rewrite it. But we already established that ha'amart ein domeh nimchak pa'machat lemachak shtei pi'amim. That you'll be able to tell. If it was erased once, and then it was going to be erased again, because the first time he wrote the shtar, it was already on erased cloth. The Edim signed on cloth, on the regular cloth. then what are you afraid of? He's going to erase the shtar and write the second time on the shtar. That means that you have two times that it was nimchak. Two times it's nimchak. We already said you'll be able to tell the difference between one machak and two machak.
This is zero.
But no, the edim aren't zero, but the actual shtar is on a place that was in nimchak twice. Oh, so that's what the Gemara is going to say. Very, very good. Hani mila eche dechatim isade amachaka. Echelo techamitim isade amachaka. Elan yaro lo yedia. So that's the problem is exactly what David just suggested. It's all about contrast. If you have a document that contrasts between one erasure and two erasures, you can see the difference. But if you're talking about a document that has the only thing you're comparing is against itself, that it was erased once or twice, that you would not be able to differentiate. You can't simply just look at a document and say it was erased twice. You can see if one area was erased once and the other area was erased twice, that contrast will afford you the ability to differentiate. But over here where the edim are signed on klaf, meaning that there's nothing erased, and the other area is erased once or twice, you will not be able to differentiate between it was erased once or twice because you're in contrast to the regular klaf. Now again, this raises Tosfos' issue is what does it mean? Does it mean that the edim actually have to be signed, that the writing, it's only when it's written on, you can see the absorption of the ink into the document is different on a single erasure, a double erasure, or klaf? Or is it that just simply the paper itself or the klaf itself, you can see the difference in the quality or the depth of the klaf, and that would be enough to differentiate. But either way, the Gemara is clear here that it has to be contrast. Without contrast, you can't tell the difference. So Gemara says, okay, you want contrast, v'leit megilta achrite, bring a different piece of klaf, right? V'limchok, erase it, v'lidme, and then compare it. Do you want contrast? We can create contrast. Get another piece of klaf, erase it once, and put it up against this klaf, and let's see, right, if it's the same. So Gemara says, lo dami machokot ha megilta, lo machokot ha megilta. You're comparing apples and oranges. Every klaf is a different thickness, it's different grade or quality, and when you erase it, the erasure will take on a different form. I would say that also, I don't think Gemara doesn't mention this, but also the person who is erasing will make a difference. Right? As opposed to when you have like today on a pencil and you're erasing, you can erase it completely. There, when you're erasing, the erasing is a scraping, a grid of the klaf itself. So how much pressure is applied or how the knife is used will determine how much, you know, what the form of the erasure as well. So the Gemara says, okay, so this is, we have an even better solution. Let us take the contract that's in front of us. We will verify the edim that are signed on here. Let's do a verification of that. And we know that the document, if we find that everything is, besides this, is true and clear and fine, then we'll go forward. So we assess the edim, we take care of that, the edim writes that we saw the chatimet edim and everything is fine. Then what we do, v'limchok, erase them. So you're on the same klaf, erase the edim that are found on the regular klaf. So you erase the edim, now what do you have? You have one erasure, and then you can compare it against the upper part of the shtar, which is two or one, we want to know. And then you have a problem. So Gemara says, there are two possible answers over here. So one answer is, the Gemara, the girsa of the Gemara is unclear here. So one girsa is, Amar Rav Hoshea, Enu Deni Michak Ben Yomo, Le Michak Ben Shnei Yamim. It's the difference between erasure a day old and erasure 2 days old. In that, just because it was erased, doesn't mean that it's going to look exactly the same. They have to be erased around the same time, or, you know, I mean, there's a difference in somehow the aging process of the erasure that will make a difference. Or, again, the other shita in Tosfos is that the ink, when you write on an erasure, you need the ink to be absorbed into the klaf, and so it will look different, the writing on this day versus the writing that was weeks old on the same level of erasure. So you have to be, you can't really discern in that way. So Gemara says, okay, no problem. Let it hang out. Let it age. I mean that if you think it's an aging issue, let it age. So Gemara says, I'm Rabbi Yirmiyahu achashin on the Beit Din Toin. We worry about the fact that there is a Beit Din Toin. That we worry about, that's a very complex, right, sophisticated comparison and aging and all this. This is beyond the scope of what most but they didn't even could deal with. So if it's beyond their scope, we start to worry about a Beis Din not taking care of these issues. So in order to prevent such fraud from coming up, or a Beis Din not doing to do with these types of documents, say pasul, and then we don't deal with these types of documents. Now the way to read this Gemara, there's one of two possibilities.
But if I wait a few days, then it's not one and 2 days, it's 3 and 4 days.
Right, so that's what's explained here, that there are many who read, when they leave it out, they leave Rav Hoshea out entirely. That it's that, when the Gemara asks, v'lim chok v'lidme, then they skip down, and the Girsa reads like this, Amar Rav Yirmiyahu Chashin and the Beis Din Toin. right? We worry about a Beis Din Toin. So that's not, I mean, that this, it's trumps to the Beis Din Toin is the answer to the problem of Lidme. Let us compare the documents. We worry about a Beis Din Toin that doesn't know how to do this. This was has the Andalo Goris Le Savar Kimoakain, Eno Domen Nimchak Ben Shneyamim, Lenichak Ben Shlosha. So that's the answer to your question, right? Tulsa says that the reason they skip that girsa and they don't have Ravoshi in the girsa is that exactly what your point is, that when you get to 3 or 4 days, you're also not going to be able to discern. You're not going to be able to make... The waiting is not going to help you in any way.
So,
right? There's a relative difference that always remains, right? So that's it. So one possibility is the girsa is that the only difference is between a new erasure and the one day, but if you leave it over time, it'll be fine, and that's what Hashina Beis Din Toin. Or the other day, who leaves out the girsa of Ravoshia and skips directly to Rabbi Irmiya, that is, Hashina Beis Din Toin is the problem of Lidme, and we're not going to ask. I mean, there's up to a certain point, we're going to ask Beis Din to be involved. At this point, it's so complex. True, if we have to, you have to deal with it, but we're not going to put people in a position to have to deal with it, and everyone will be Pusel or Shtar in that case. Alright, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Mer Mekushar. So this is in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says that you can switch a shtar Mekushar to a shtar Pashut. You'll be able to do that. Meaning, if the Edim sign on the inside of a shtar Mekushar, then you're fine. They sign on the inside. So, Heshiv Rabbi Ledivir Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel. Rabbi says, wait a minute, Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, does it really make sense what you're saying? Hello, Eno Dome Zmano Shozeh, Lezmano Shozeh. The dating system is different between a Pashut and a Mekushar. This we saw before in the Gemara, that the Gemara says that the Chachamim tried to differentiate as much as possible between a Pashut and a Mekushar. For instance, that a Mekushar requires 3 Edim, and a Pashut only requires 2 Edim. Another difference between them is the dating system that's used. Pashut, malach shana, monim lo shana. Shtayim, monim lo shtayim. So when it comes to a king's reign, if he's in his first year, the document will document the dating as in the first year of the king's reign. If it's the second year of a reign, it will document it as the second year. Mikushar, malach shana, monim lo shtayim. And if it's first year of reign, they will say in his second year. Shtayim, monim lo gimel. In his second year, they will write it as the third year of his reign.
So,
here's the Mishnah. It's a Mekushar. It's a Get Mekushar. It says document that's written as Mekushar, but the Edim sign on the same side as the Shtar. As opposed to a regular Mekushar, where they sign on the back, here they sign on the inside. So Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel says that's a kosher contract. That's fine. If they sign on the inside, you can flip a Mekushar into a Pashut. So Mary wants to know, wait, the dating system that's used in each one of them is different. So therefore, how could you flip a Mekushar into a Pashut if the dating system is not the same? So the Gemara says, so we'll see in a second.
To get
well, no, the other way around, it's going to become a get mukdam. We'll see. So here, v'zimnim. So let's see what's going to happen. Zimnim diyazif minei zuzei b'mikushar. So what's he going to do? He's going to take the borrow the money when he thought it was a get mikushar. Umitzrame le zuzei beni ubeni. In the interim, he gets money, hands in the money. Uparle. So v'amale havli shtarai. He says to me, give me back my shtar. Says Amalei Irkasli, it was ripped up, lost it, don't have it to give back. So Katavalei Tavro, so he gives him a shovar. Says, here you go, take your receipt. Chimate Zimnei. So when the time comes, Meshavalei Pashut, he'll flip it into being a Pashut. Amalei, Hani Hashli Yosav Minai. You're right, you have a receipt, but you have a receipt for last year. This is from this year. The document is showing a date after the shovar. So you borrowed of it. So now the problem. Let's think about the problem. So now, today's date, right? It's Yud Zayin Bishvat, right? It's February 1st today. So now you said, if it was a Shtar Mikushar, it's February 1st, the king came to reign on January 1st, came to reign on Rosh Chodesh Shvat, right? He came to reign, and now you're writing a Shtar Mikushar. So what are you going to write in a Shtar Mikushar? In the second year of the king, right, you borrowed money, or I lent you money in the second year of the king. Now, if you read it as a Pashut document, what is it going to say? It's going to say in the first year of the reign of the king, right, you borrowed money. But now the Pashut is written. It's written as a Mekushar as the second year. So now I call a year later, which is really the second year of the king's reign, a year later from now. So in the interim, the guy got money, he paid him back. And he has a receipt that says, on Rosh Chodesh Sivan, paid him back the money. Yeah, it's middle of June, paid him back the money, it's done. He has a shovar. Comes the following year, takes out the shtar. The shtar was originally written as a shtar mikushar, which means that it says in the second year of the reign of the king. So now he flips it, he puts Eidim on the inside of the shtar, and now it becomes a shtar pashut. And the shtar pashut's written in it in the second year of the reign of the king. Second year of the reign of the king is next year, Rosh Chodesh Shvat, or next year, right, January 1st. That's the reign of the king. When's his shofar? His shofar is for the 6 months earlier. Says you borrow the money after the shofar. Because of the way the dating system is different, you're going to end up with a shtar, right? A shtar mukdam over here. We're going to end up with a problem. So now Tosfos over here, by the way, follows this line of thinking, and he says, who are we worried about here? Who are we worried for over here? So he says, Perush umas de lukuchot. We're worried about buyers in the interim, not about this borrower over here. We're not worried about the debtor. We're about the people who purchased property in the interim, because now they're up on the hook. They thought they purchased property after when he was free and clear. Now he's going to pull out this document and say, listen, you know, you owe me money. So now the luchot are at risk. So they said, we're worried about kishlok yadin. Aval mishum pseidah deloveh lo ichpad lan. De'ihu hud afsid enafshei. Kishalava b'hai shtora. When he borrowed in such a way, he put himself at risk. Same idea that Tosfos keeps expressing, that if we're not here to protect the debtor, we're not here to protect the edim, we're here to protect innocent parties that are going to be taken advantage of. So the innocent parties here, the lukuchot, have no way to know what's going on. They just see that there was a receipt that the debt's repaid, so they don't worry about it. And they didn't know about this whole thing about the mekushar versus the pashut. They weren't aware of this. They never saw the shtar. How do they know what's going to happen here? And same thing in general by the edim, we expected them to know what happened in the shtar, to know that they could be taken advantage of. We don't expect the debtor to know how the edim signed over here and what put them at risk. That's going to put him at risk at the shtar above. Because who's holding the shtar? The creditor. So for there, we're here to protect in the case where the shtar can be forged, we're here to protect the debtor. In a case where, and not the edim, over here, where it's the debtor got himself into this problem by allowing such a shtar to be written, then we say, we're not protecting you, we're protecting the kuchot, who are the innocent parties over here. Tosfos does bring a second shita, says, Inami, Ishmarat in lahen hefsei lukuchot, kugon techeb seher shtar below achrayut. What happens if it's a shtar that has no achrayut in it? Right, there's no lien that's written into the shtar. There's no lien written into the shtar, then there's no problem. Elama, what? Filohachi chashinah b'seid of the love. We do protect the debtor. Why? Shein zeh b'seid she alove yodeh al yizaher kol kach. V'lo misik adati she velo de ziyuf. It's a far-fetched case. It's a very, it's a more sophisticated type of ziyuf over here. And since it's so sophisticated, we don't expect the debtor to understand this ahead of time. So again, we're trying to protect innocent parties who are not going to know or shouldn't have known better. If they should have known better, then we're not going to protect them. So over here, we're trying to protect them. So what are you going to do here? So he says, Kasavar in Kodvim Shovar. It's no problem. He believes that you can't write a receipt. The only way to terminate a loan is to have the shtar be returned or ripped up. The shovar will not help. So if you can't write a shovar, they don't have this problem. The only time this problem comes up is if the shtar is still extant. Shtar still extant, then you have the problem because you wrote a shovar. So what he says, if you can't write a shovar, then he says, listen, I'll pay you back the money when you hand me the shtar. You don't hand me the shtar, you're not getting your money back. So either he shows up with the shtar. If he doesn't have the shtar, he lost. The creditor lost on his own because he didn't keep the shtar.
If you lost the shtar, so when I got the receipt, I write on the receipt, you sign the receipt that shovar has been missing, or there is a
shtar. Oh, the shtar is destroyed, right. You could sell
the
receipt.
Malvin lost
the shtar. He's a creditor. He mafsid av nafshei. He lost it. He was the one. It's his loan. It's not like someone else lost it. He lost his own loan. So it could be ian afsid av nafshei. I think, right, your solution also, Ariel, is also an interesting solution, is that if he writes in the shovar, that the claim that the creditor says the document was lost, the problem with that is that the dating here says that this document was written afterwards. So it looks like it's a totally new document.
Unless he writes on the shtar in the shovar the date of the loan that was written.
Right. So the date of the loan, it was written on a mekushar that was this and this. I mean, if you can give enough description that it can't be brought out again, that's a possibility that could protect you in these instances. All right. So now the Gemara says, "Umi baki Rebbe mekushar." It's such an interesting question. The Gemara. Gemara says Rebbe is challenging Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel over here in the Mishnah about to get mekushar. Yeah, what does Rebbe know about mekushar? Well, we're going to see that Rebbe, we saw already once, by the way, with his son, that he had a problem, he didn't know where to find the date. And the son says, why don't you look on the back of the Mikushar? So we already know Rebbe wasn't as aware of Mikushar. Tosfos asked the question, how is that possible? Right. Tosfos asked the question before, how is it possible that he doesn't know about Mikushar? It's in the Mishnah. All right. Even if you say he doesn't know the Mishnah, if he doesn't know the Mishnah, then how do you know the Mishnah about dating and Pashut also?
He was the editor.
Right. Or whatever, he redacted. The question is, right, so the there are questions. Tosfos deals with it early on in the story of Rebbe. Tosfos gives these right difficult answers about why, what is it? How does Rebbe not know about Mikushar? The possibility was that it was a more Mikushar than he expected, meaning that it was more buried in the Kesher than he would have expected, and that's the easiest way to explain it. I mean that, yes, he knew what a get Mikushar was, but he still thought you could be able to see the signature on the back. But he said that it was so buried in the Kesher that he couldn't see it. So that's a possibility, or the dating was buried so far in that he couldn't see it, which he didn't expect. But either way, we have another case here of Rebbe by Mekushar. So that was V'hal Mekushar Da'atel Kami Rebbe. There was a get Mekushar Kami Rebbe. I'm a Rebbe. Shtar Mucharze. This is a shtar muchar. Why? Because of the dating system. The dating system postdates the shtar and the kushar to the second year ahead, plus 1 year in the reign of the king. Ramalei zonin. One of the Talmid Chachamim says the rabbi, kach min agash lo mazu malach shana onilim shtayim shtayim onilim lo shalosh. Right. So that's. He told them that that's the dating system for a mikushar. That means the Rebbe didn't know. So no problem. Both of the Shama Mizonin Savrua. Once he learned, he was a quick learner. He Zonim taught him what a mikushar looks like. Now he knows what a mikushar looks like. So Aush Daro Dahakatov Be Bishnat Ploni Arkan. So it was written in the year of so and so Arkan. So now what's Arkan mean here? So Amar Rabbi Chanina Yivadeik. Let's go check when Arkan came to rule. Now, when Arkan over here, sound, the Gemara sounds a little bit like he's a king. Tosfos points out that Arkan sounds more like some sort of governorship or political appointment. So, because we'll see in the Gemara in a second why it sounds like that. So he says, go check when this person came to that position of power or took on the reins. Vintilmo. So why don't we just say, what do you mean, go look? The way it's written now, Bishnat Ploni Arkan, so in this year of the so-and-so Arkan. So maybe you're suggesting now that the word Arkan here means the melech, the king, or it's the position of power. But why don't you can read it the same way, Dilma Adarich Milchuvtei, that he should have long days or long life in this position. So why are you saying that go check how many years Arkan has been there? Maybe the Arkan is not about the position, but rather Orech Yamim. That this is the Ploni, this is such and such Sana, and he should be on there for many years. You know, God bless him, and it should be there for many years. So how do you know what the word Arkan means over here? So Amar Rav Oshia, Kach min Agash Mazu, Shana Rishana Korim Lo Arkan, Shnia Korim Lo Digun. So that these are terms, are descriptive terms. I would say the same way that in the Torah, the person who ruled over Mitzrayim was called a pharaoh, paro or a pharaoh. I mean that wasn't, not everybody's name was pharaoh, right? The pharaoh is a descriptive term. Same thing in the Plishtim, Avimelech. Avimelech is a term of right kingship, not a term or name of an individual. That there were many, anybody who ruled over there was called Avimelech. You have that in right, the monarchy in England. Right, that they used in France also, they used the same name over again. It was a name of royalty. So too over here. These names were not names of the individual, but rather it was a terminology to describe the years the person was in power. In his first year in power, he was called an Arkan. In his second year in power, he was called a Digun. So therefore, we know that if it's an Arkan, it's his first year. If it's a Digun, it's in his second year. So that's how we do. You don't have to worry about how many years. You don't have to check how many years because the Shnat Ploni, you know, Bishnat Ploni Arkan, so that's in the year of Anikan means the first year. So you don't have to worry about that. Shnat Ploni means the first year of Mr. So and so Arkan, the ruler. And it's not saying Bishnat Ploni Arkan, he should be there for many years. Arkan is a definition, a word that has a definition, which means 1 year. If it was in the next second year, it would say Bishnat Ploni Digun. Right, and that'll go on. It goes on. So we'll see in a second more than that. So Mar says, "V'dilma avure avrua v'ader akuma." Maybe they deposed him and then reinstated him. So if they deposed him and reinstated him, then the second time he's reinstated, he'd be called an Arkan again. So even though it's the second year of his reign, he's still called an Arkan because it's really the first time in the new, right, in his new reign. So this is Tosfos' proof that it's not a king. So since when do you depose a king and then reinstate the king? You know, Tosfos wasn't around, he lived a little longer, that happened. But in general, we don't assume that the king is deposed and reinstated. Assume that lower figures of power are deposed by the king and then reinstated at points in time. So there, the Gemara says, "Amiria, how Arkan digun karile? If you are ruling for the second, you are deposed, and then ruling for the second time, but it's the first year of your second time, they call you Arkan, meaning your first year of rule, Digun, the second time. So it's like 1B, or 1Bet. Right? So as opposed to the first one, it's called Arkan, the second one's called Arkan Digun. The second time he is an Arkan. So that's why how they solve that problem, so you won't have confusion over here. So now the Gemara is going to say, what is this Arkan and Digun? Tan Rabbanan. Hareini Nazir, right? So if you say, I am a Nazir, Sumchus Amar, Hina Achat, Digun Shtaim, Trigun 3, Trigun Arba 4, Pandigun Chamesh. So these are, as the Rishbam points out, he says, Karov Velash Shalanu. It's very close to our language, right? These are Greek terms, right? Latin derivatives, which today we still have the prefixes, which is digun comes from di, two, meaning two. Trigun comes from tri, meaning three. Tetrigon comes from tetra, right, from four. And pentagon is from penta, which is five. So over here, the Mishnah states that we have a case, if a Nazir comes along and says, I am a Nazir, Hina, one time. I'm a Nazir two times. That means that each time he says that, he's saying a number of 30-day periods he's going to be a Nazir for. Says Hina means one 30-day period. Digun means two 30-day periods. Trigon's three, Tartrigon four, Pentagon chamesh. Tanra banan. Baitigul, a house that is circular. Digun, a house that has two walls. Trigon that has three walls. Pentagon or five walls. Enu metame b'negayim. Does not become tamei negayim, because tetragon metamei negayim. You have to have a four-walled house to have the negay batim come. Or if they come, the only tamei if they are found in a four-walled house. Minahane mile. How do you know that if it's only in a four-walled house? Tan rabbanan lamalo omer kir kirot. Shtaim lamat omer kir kirot. The pasuk by negayim uses the term kirot twice in the pasuk. Kirot habayit. Kirot Abayit being plural. So since it used it, instead of saying Kir Abayit, which it could have said, used Kirot in the plural twice. So Kirot in the plural twice is 2 times 2 is 4. So you require 4. So Arikan Arba. So only 4 walls of the house will be Mitameh Negayim. But if you have any other combination, so if it's circular, no Negayim. It's 2 walls, no Negayim. How do you have a 2-walled house? You have 2 walls, and the other part is circular. It's a half circle, semicircle, and then 2 walls. That's not. 3-walled house, no good. And a 5-walled. The pentagon will not be mekabel negay batim. Alright, so now, why did the Gemara bring this down? The Gemara brought this down to show you that these terms, digun, and also here, arkan would be synonymous with hina, mean 1, 2, 3. They're using a terminology that describes the rulership of these individuals by the counting process or the counting language that was used over then, using that time. Right now, the Gemara now brings the case that Rebbe and his son with the get mekushar that we saw earlier. Al mekushar, the atal the kamei derabi, v'amar Rebbe, and zeman bazeh. There's no date in this mekushar. Amalei Rabbi Shimon b'Rebbe, the Rebbe. Rabbi Shimon says to Rebbe, Shema ben Kisharav Muvla. Maybe it's buried inside of its folds. Playa, they opened it up, b'chazi, and they saw it. Chadar chazabe Rebbe b'bishut. He saw Rebbe was looking with disdain towards his son, Rabbi Shimon. I mean, how could you write a document like this? Why did you bury the date so much into the Kesher? That's the way the Rishbam reads it. Why did you do it? You could have written it higher up on the Kesher. It would have been obvious where the date was. But you buried it inside the Kesher. Why did you do such a thing? So Rebbe was looking with disapproval towards his son, Rabbi Shimon. So what does Rabbi Shimon do? Amalei Lavana Katve. I didn't write it. Rabbi Yehuda Chaita Katve. That document's not written by me, it's written by Rabbi Yehuda Kadvei. So what does Rabbi say to his son? Of course. I'm like, klach, Lashon Hara zeh. What are you speaking Lashon Hara? I'm upset. So you're telling me Lashon Hara about who spoke it? Who wrote it? So you didn't write it? Right? Who should have written it? Now, the question is, what should have Rabbi Shimon done in this case? What should he have done in this case? That's what the Rabbeinu Gershom says. The Rabbeinu Gershom says he should have simply said, he says, Ela hayelo lomar ani lo ketavtif. I didn't write it. That's it. He shouldn't have implicated who the person was who did write it. He just simply should say, I did not write it. You know what the Rashbam says? Listen to the Rashbam. Rashbam says, Hayalacha lomar ini ketavtif. I wrote it. You should take the fall. So the Rashbam claims over here that you shouldn't say anything. You should just take the fall here. You're you know, implicated here in the wrong, you take the fall for it. Don't say anything. The Reina of Gershon says, no, you say, I didn't write it, but you don't implicate the other party. So now, why? We're thinking, my brother and I, when we were learning this, pointed out, reminded me of the Gemara in Sanhedrin. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin with Rebbe, and Daf Yud Aleph and Aleph. Rebbe is teaching a shir, and he comes in the morning, starts teaching shir, and he says, who had garlic last night? Whose breath stinks over here and has garlic over here? So, you know, everybody's embarrassed. Nobody wants to walk out. So over there, then Rabbi, I think it's from Chanina. Chanina walks out of the shir. And because he walked out, everybody else walked out with him. So the next day, they bump into Rabbi Shimon Bray. They walk into, he bumps into Rabbi Shimon's son. He says, Rabbi Shimon's son says that, how could you do that to my father? How could you embarrass my father? You walked out and then everybody else walked out. And it was clear that it wasn't him who had eaten the garlic. And he says, Lo tehei kezeb Yisrael. That they should be no more like your father so that he goes to embarrass an individual in front. So what do you see over there? That he took the fall, even though it wasn't him. He was willing to take the fall for the accusation of Rebbe of who ate shum, who ate garlic in the class. So what do you see from that? Maybe that's what the Rashbam is basing his position over here. That when he says that Rebbe says something, what did they do? The case in Sanhedrin, he just walked out and he took the blame for it. Took the whole blame for it. So that's what the Rashbam is suggesting over here. You take the blame, that's it. You don't object. You just let it go. As Rabbeinu Gershom seems to suggest, which seems to me to be the more logical approach, which is that you deny that it was you. You say, I didn't write this. But you don't implicate who did write it. You might run into avak lashon hara. By definition, if there are only two parties and you say, I didn't write it, then you will be implicating the other party. And then you have to be, maybe have to be more careful. All right, now. So then, the Gemara Zimin Ave Yotiv Kamei, become Pasik Sidra Sefer Tehillim. So there were some times that Rebbe and Rabbi Shimon and his son were sitting in, Rabbi Shimon and his son were sitting in front of him, and they were learning together from Sefer Tehillim. So Amar Rebbe, he used to finish, he was finishing up one of the Sefer Tehillim. Amar Rebbe, come on, Yimushar Katov Zeh. How beautiful is this writing over here? How meduyak is this writing over here? This person whoever wrote is Medayek, beautiful so fair. Says Rabbi Shimon, whose father thought was wrote it, he says, I didn't write it. Yehuda Chaita Katvei. Yehuda Chaita wrote it. So I'm like, Klach, Lashon Hara Zeh. Stop speaking Lashon Hara about Yehuda Chaita. He says, what do you mean Lashon Hara? Bishloma. That makes sense according to Atamika Lashon Hara. In the first case, where the implication is negative, then it is Lashon Hara. Elohocha, my Lashon Hara Ika. Over here, what Lashon Hara is there? I mean, he's saying something good. Instead of taking the credit, he's giving the credit to the person who's due the credit, to Yehuda Chaita. Says Mishum de Rav Dimi. Problem is Rav Dimi. Ditani Rav Dimi Achua de Rav Safra. Dimi, the brother of Rav Safra. La Olam Al Yisaper Adam Betovato Shel Chaveiro. Person should not even speak about the good aspects of an individual. Shemitoch Tovato Baalidei Raato. From speaking good about him, you end up in speaking poorly about them, meaning that this is avak lashon hara, that you will trigger poor a speech about an individual or lashon hara with the individual by speaking positively about them. So now the poskim deal over here is that not that you can't praise somebody, but that you shouldn't praise someone to an individual who you know has a some sort of issue with this individual, or you know someone who might take issue with your praise. That you have to be careful. I mean, that praising an individual, number one, is okay, but not in a context where you know that it might arouse in the other individual the desire to speak poorly of them. Or the other case is that you shouldn't overly praise them. That you shouldn't do it to an extent that it's so much so that a person feels compelled to tell you, listen, you know, like tone it down a little bit, and then it tells you something bad.
Marsha says something interesting. He says that the second mice of Rebbe saying, don't say this Lashon Hara, because Rebbe was able to recognize that the sofer with the hill was the same sofer as the previous mice.
Over there, I mean, there he said explicitly already. I don't know if he had to really. You're saying that from that he could imply that the other was the negative. It's right. It makes sense because it has to be something that would trigger something negative. So it makes sense that if he saw the writing from the Tehillim, that would then infer from that that was the same writer as the Shtarot that he was upset about. Right? Why? So now the Gemara says, "Amrav Amram Amrav Shlosh Averot Ein Adam Nitzol Mehem B'Chol Yom." There are three Averot that people can barely avoid. It's very hard for them to avoid. Meaning that here the Marshal says this is for regular people. And even though you have to make a huge shtablus to try to stop them, and even if you try hard, they almost always happen anyway. Says that they're very hard to protect from them. Tzadikim can protect themselves from them. These are things that people trip up all the time. What are they? Hirhura Rivera, Iyun Tfila, Vilashonara. So Gemara says, Lashonara, Sankadatcha, nobody can stop Lashonara. Ela Vak Lashonara. It's true, you're not compelled to speak Lashonara every day, even though, right, in modern day, maybe that's a problem, even so, that the Lashonara is so prevalent. But nevertheless, they said that, okay, a person can stop. He doesn't have to speak bad every day, but at least a bak lashon is high, hard. Because even if you're not saying anything bad, you're saying something good, you could trigger lashon hara. You do something that could trigger lashon hara, that's very hard to stay away from. Now, what are these things? Hirurei aveira, right? A person thought about doing an aveira, all right, has some hirurim that would lead to an aveira. That's very hard, even though he doesn't carry it out, just the thought itself. Number two is iyun tefila. Iyun tefila is subject to machlokas rashi and Tosafot in many other places, Gemara in Bracha, Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. Over there, Rashi, which the Rashbam quotes over here as the same Shita, is that this is a person who davens with tremendous Kabbanah and then has an expectation that Hashem should answer his tefillot. Because he davened with Kabbanah, he expects Hashem to answer his tefillot. So that is Aveira, because he has an expectation. He's making a demand of God. He's saying, basically, I davened with Kabbanah, you must do this. So that demand, or that assumption that God would answer him, and if he doesn't answer him, he's going to be disappointed, that is the Aveira of Iyun Tefillah. The Tosus over here rejects that pshat. He rejects that pshat and brings the pshat which we see in other places of the Rabbeinu Tam. It's funny. The other, like Rosh Hashanah, the Tosus brings the pshat of Rabbeinu Tam and says they don't like the pshat of Rabbeinu Tam, and then quotes the other pshat of Tosus, which is the Rashbam and Rashi's pshat. Over here, they quote the Rashbam and Rashi's pshat, and they reject them. They say, no, like the Rabbeinu Tam. So what's Rabbeinu Tam's pshat? Says the Nira the Rebbe here being probably Rabbeinu Tam, because that's his who's quoted Rosh Hashanah, to Iyun Tfilah Shura She'ena Mekuvanim Amechavnim B'Tfilatan. They daven without Kavana. Iyun Tfilah is simply that you are not Me'ayin B'Tfilatcha, that you do not pay enough attention to your Tfilah, that you do not daven with proper Kavana. So the Rabbeinu Tam believes that Iyun Tfilah is the inability to daven with proper Kavana. Rashi and the seemed the other day in Tosfot seem to indicate, the Rishbam over here said that no, in tefillah is that you are mechavim b'tefillatcha, but you are not. Why? Do you have expectations that God will answer, and you are making that mistake of expecting just because you daven mikavana that everything should come true. So now the Gemara continues. Amar Yehuda, Amar Rav, Rov begezel umiut be'arayot. Most people get stuck in theft. Theft here being the Rabbeinu Gershom points out, they lie and cheat in business. The Rashbam says a similar type of thing, so that people are more heter b'masa matan, akeveter ish me'arevach. That they say, look, the guy's making money already, I can keep some of the profit, I don't have to give him. I mean, they're more heter to themselves, that they're allowed to keep some people money in masa matan. They give themselves the ability to, when it's not relatively theirs, they keep some or they take some because they feel like the other person's profiting too much, or he's already getting a profit, why should I get some of it? So they're more heter in masa matan. Either way, it's a lack of integrity in masav matan, in business dealings or in dealings with others. So that's robegezu, miyut ba'arayot. And there are a couple people get caught by the arayot. Maybe today that's a little different. Maybe it's rov and rov. Right, ba'kol, b'lashon hara. And everybody gets trapped in lashon hara. Again, lashon hara, sakadatka. Everybody's speaking lashon hara all the time. Again, I don't know, maybe in our times, you could have, they might want to say sakadatka. Right, how could it be? But, aval avak lashon hara. What it must be that you're talking about here, not lashon hara literally, but avak lashon hara. Avak lashon hara, meaning that not that you speak lashon hara, you do things that could engender lashon hara, that could trigger lashon hara in other people. That's again the answer. The reason that these are all brought here is that the Gemara had the same point in all these cases, that Rebbe's chastising his son because of avak lashon hara, then the Gemara brought two memrot that deal with lashon hara. Where the Gemara says it's not talking about lashon hara, but rather it's talking about avak lashon hara. Okay, we'll stop over here.